This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes of the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Dream come true.
That is the highlight of my professional career. And all I care about in this moment is what my friend Dory Monson thinks about my hour number two echo. So, Nicole, if he's feeling up to it, you tell him I need a robust critique of
okay.
it.
Okay. Will do.
This is, as Dory says, the fastest 15 minutes in the news. What is it? Wrapped up in a teeny tiny itty bitty 15-minute package just for you. This is Brandy Cruz filling in for my dear friend Dory Monson, who is Dory. Dory Monson, who's under the weather today, and I got to do the hour number two echo, and I'm so happy. It was very elegant, if I do say so myself.
Even without the mixing, that was beautiful.
Yeah, I won't say it was on key, Sean, per se. You could have fixed the key for me a little bit, but, you know, you can't be expected to do everything.
Well, you know, just to call out Sir Andrew Enzel, he's actually the one who edited that.
Ah,
he was the board op on here before me, so.
Gotcha.
Well, where's that bus, Andrew? Oh, yeah, thrown under it.
Yes, I'll let it slide. Christmas is canceled. Canceled, as my friend Dory would say. Okay, it's not canceled. However, you might have a hard time getting a Christmas tree. And I've got to say, I saw this story and I thought to myself, that's true. So I went to my boyfriend Mike and I, we were going back and forth between a real tree or a fake tree. And I kind of wanted a real tree, but wasn't sure if we'd have time to go shopping. So I stopped by Home Depot in Issaquah and they had all these beautiful trees just lit up and ready for you to choose. And I looked at all of them. There's like two rows of them. There's like 20 trees.
And these are the fake ones.
Fake ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the one. I saw the
really,
one.
You're going fake.
Oh, my gosh. Well, no, I'm not done with my story.
Okay, okay, sorry.
Nicole.
Sorry. You considered it.
How does Dory deal with you? I saw the one. It was like gleaming. And I was like, that's the one. It was tall. It had so many lights. And it was just beautiful and
looked
elegant.
Real.
Looked real. It was like the most real looking one. So all the trees have the boxes with the tree, you know, if you want to buy it, set up next to them. And I go over to the tree that has captured my heart and my fantasy and all my Christmas dreams. And there's no boxes next to it. I'm like, what the heck? So I go over and find a Home Depot worker who's unloading boxes of Christmas trees next to fake ones. And all the other trees of like all these 20 have some boxes, have a few boxes left. The one tree I wanted, he said, were sold out. We don't have any more of those. I was brokenhearted. And apparently this is an issue for many families. The Washington Post reporting that supply chain problems could not only impact fake trees, but real trees as well. I like this sentence out of the Washington Post. Many families are unsure whether they will spend the holiday gathered around a majestic tower of greenery or something more reminiscent of Charlie Brown's sad spectacle. And I will say, so my mother was in town from Fargo, and we went to, after my failed Home Depot experiment, we all went Saturday after Thanksgiving, and we went to a couple tree farms in the North Bend area. We went to the first two, and all they had was sad Charlie Brown trees.
So these are pre-cut?
No, they were out, like when
oh,
you
okay.
cut them. And that's kind of the Christmas experience I wanted,
of course,
right? I'm like,
yeah.
I want to chop that thing down with my man, you know?
Yes.
I want that memory. And so we went around, and there was like, you know, short ones, maybe 3 feet. And there was some that were 7 feet and they were missing all the limbs. And I'm like, what happened here? It was like apocalyptic. I was like, what happened to all these trees? So I kind of felt bad because we left both Christmas tree farms and I wanted to support small
really?
Business.
And that's early on in
there
your
was, and I felt, yeah, I felt really
season.
Picky. I'm like, maybe we should have just done a Christmas, you know, like a Charlie Brown tree and saved one of these
you
trees.
Just put
from
more decorations in there.
There was hardly any limbs mm-hmm. for decorations on some of these. So anyway, we end up going to, I wish I could remember the name of this Christmas tree farm because we got our tree from there a couple years ago too. And they had a ton. It was very odd. So we went there and got a pre-cut tree. But apparently, if you haven't got a tree already, you might want to get on it because this is an issue, and I faced it firsthand. And of all the first world problems to have, not
you know
having
what I
a
did.
Christmas tree. What did you do?
I got a potted one. So it's a live tree. So it's still got its roots, and it sits in a pot all year. And so I did this last year. I got one that's potted, and then after Christmas, I took it outside, and I made a mistake last year, though. I didn't give it enough sunlight. It was kind of pushed up against the shade, and so one side of it died. So so this year, I got a different kind, and it's still in a pot, and it's about three feet tall, maybe. and I'm going to put it outside. And worst case scenario, I just plant it again and buy
like
one.
A lot
but it's
of work.
An emergency tree for next year. If there's no trees, I have a tree.
It seems like a lot of work.
No, it's actually fun. I like it. You don't have to worry about it being tipped over because it's not on a stand. It's got a whole big pot weighing it down. And, you know, I have cats. So
you do have cats.
That solves that problem.
Two cats and no boyfriend. Yeah. We're working on that. I'm working on that.
I know. I appreciate it.
Dory's probably like, Brandy's filling in and she just talked about Christmas trees for 6 minutes. So up next in the fastest 15. CNBC anchor went on a little rant. The Mad Money host, Jim Cramer. Monday night, he demanded that the Biden administration require forced vaccinations nationwide.
Some of us are old enough to remember when we were told we had to get a needle stuck into our arms because of some disease that was so scary we were afraid to talk about it. The disease was called polio. No one knew how you got it, but you were scared to go to a place where anyone might congregate, a swimming pool, a park. Then we got a vaccine that worked, and President Eisenhower said we would end polio. He pulled it off because he didn't give us any choice. Soon after, as if the needle were too hard, they came up with a sugar cube, they being the scientists at the time, and we lined up and took them too. Mine tasted like maraschino cherries. Yeah, like the Del Monte fruit cocktail my mom served, but only better. Lord knows what happened if you didn't partake, but back then, anyone who refused to get vaccinated would get ratted out immediately because we knew that person could hurt other people. The common wheel was a common wheel. Now we're engaged in a similar struggle with COVID, and Eisenhower would be aghast. We have immunocompromised people who are incubators for every variant to come, walking around lawfully unvaccinated? That's psychotic. We have companies that have tried hard to get people vaccinated and now backing down. We have governors who want to be president by grandstanding on a foolish states' rights issue, the right to get sick, get other people sick. So it's time to admit that we have to go to war against COVID. Require vaccination universally. Have the military run it. If you don't want to get vaccinated, you better be ready to prove your conscientious objector status in court.
What? Jim Cramer, CNBC, suggesting that the U.S. government send the military around, what, door to door, to force Americans into vaccinations. Interesting, Jim Cramer. He hasn't been on my radar. Now you are. Up next in the fastest 15, and this is just in, right, Nicole? Is a new sound?
Yes.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, Peter Ducey with Fox, who always makes headlines. He always has a good question or two for those in power. He does, and then people are like, oh, Peter Ducey with Fox, you know. And I'm like, actually, that was a legit good question.
And it's what American people want asked at these press conferences.
Whenever they're going after Peter Ducey for asking some question they think is too Fox News-esque, I'm like, that is such deflection. And this is another case of a really good question, a question that if we all care about public health and safety, we should care about this question and want a good answer to it. So Peter Ducey asking Dr. Anthony Fauci about the fact that they're talking about, because of the new variant, some increased standards for people entering the country. And Peter Ducey wanted to know whether that includes undocumented immigrants coming in across our nation's southern border.
Has you advised the president about the possibility of new testing requirements for people coming into this country? Does that include everybody?
The answer is yes, because you know that the new regulation, if you want to call it that, is that anybody and everybody who's coming into the country needs to get a test within 24 hours of getting on the plane to come here.
But what about people who don't take a plane and just these border crossers coming in huge numbers?
Yeah, no, but that's a different issue. For example, when you talk, we still have Title 42 with regard to protection at the border. So there are protections at the border that you don't have the capability, as you know, of somebody getting on a plane, getting checked, looking at a passport. We don't have that there, but we can get some degree of mitigation.
He says that's a different issue, and asked by Fox's Peter Ducey about trying to keep this new variant out of the country, the U.S. going to great lengths, prohibiting travel from certain countries, talking about increasing requirements for Americans coming back from travel abroad. But when it comes to undocumented immigrants coming across our nation's southern border, Dr. Anthony Fauci saying that is a different issue. You know, I had a really interesting conversation about this with my friend Allie Bradley, who, like me, left Fox 13, and she filed a report for my new independent show, Undivided. And Allie, after she left Fox 13 in Seattle, she spent weeks not only down at the southern border, but also marching with a migrant caravan up to the U.S. border. And she's just been really, really on the ground and doing some great unbiased reporting about what's happening. And she talked about the fact that in these migrant caravans, they had folks exhibiting symptoms similar to COVID, that testing wasn't being done, that vaccines weren't being given. And you had a lot of illness, and not just COVID, but other illnesses amongst migrants in the caravan and up at the southern border under the bridge in Del Rio. And, you know, you also have, obviously, you have the migrants who are found by, you know, border officials and go through some sort of processing process. But you also have individuals who get across the southern border. And to that extent, I do understand the fact that if you have somebody who's coming across undocumented and they're not detected, well, of course, you can't test them for COVID or make sure they get a vaccine because they're going to just disappear into the country. But that's where, you know, border security and those issues come into play as well, as we are in the midst of a pandemic. The government is doing everything it can, we would assume, to try to stop the spread of COVID in the United States, especially if it's coming in from other countries like they're doing right now with the Omicron variant. And so it is this really interesting, you know, one of the things Allie Bradley told me when she made an appearance on Undivided is she was talking about how the differences between the two presidents. And I had asked her, I said, you know, we hear a lot on conservative media that migrants are coming because of President Biden. Is that actually true, or is that just a conservative talking point? And she said, no. She said, the vast majority of migrants I marched with said, we're coming because of Biden, because Biden is a good man, and we'll get to the border, and he'll let us in. And some of those same migrants told Allie Bradley that they never even would have attempted to come under President Donald Trump. And so there is clearly, whether it's warranted or not, there is this impression among migrants that if they can make it to the U.S. border under President Joe Biden, that they will be let in. And this is in the middle of, and again, this goes back to, you can fault Peter Ducey for asking about that, but if we really care about the pandemic, I don't understand the desire to just dismiss outright questions about undocumented immigrants coming up in these huge migrant caravans and whether they are contributing, you know, to the COVID-19 situation in Texas or in border states and ultimately in the rest of the United States. All right, up next in the Fastest 15, King County trying to do something about its homeless crisis. There was a proposal set forth, and, you know, I'm all about common sense. I don't care the ideology of someone who proposes an idea. Could not care less. If you've got a good idea, like, I'm all on board with that. I don't care what political party you identify with. So there was this proposal in King County Council to set some standards for when you do and do not remove a homeless camp. That seems like a good idea, right? You want a few standards in there, a protocol, if you will, a plan in place. If a homeless camp arises on county property, to decide, hey, is this a homeless camp that requires our immediate attention or not? And I know during the pandemic, there was a lot of thought about, you know, it doesn't make any sense to just move a homeless camp from place to place. And there was more of a hands-off approach. So there was this proposal set forth, and it would have set some conditions for going in to clear a camp if there is a specific imminent health or public safety hazard that the camp poses, or if it blocks public resources. Like, let's say you've got a camp in a park, which is not unheard of, or you've got a camp on sidewalks and people can't access the sidewalks. So this seems like a very common sense thing. Like, hey, let's have an idea. Let's have a protocol. And there would also be a plan laid out in this proposal for when not to remove a camp, when it's a better idea to just leave it in place for now and do some outreach and get some services to folks. So I know that this won't come as a surprise to anyone. This proposal was shot down in the King County Council. According to Como News, the bill's sponsors called the vote disheartening, saying, quote, it's past time we found a compassionate, common sense solution to maintaining our public spaces for everyone. And I don't get this. I got to be honest. And this is the challenge Seattle has as well. you know, it's like it goes back to this thing where we're all or nothing. It's like either you care about the homeless or you don't care about them at all. And why can't we have some reasonable agreement about the fact that, you know, we can care about homeless individuals, we can have a common set of standards for how we're going to care for those individuals, get them outreach for the issues that they're facing, but we're also not going to let a homeless camp form in a park where kids play. Or we're also not going to let a homeless camp form along Third Avenue, blocking people from walking down there to shop, to dine, you know, freaking out tourists and all of that. I don't understand why it can't be both. You know, we can't be compassionate about the way we deal with issues who are in profound crisis, mental health, substance abuse. But we also have some compassion for people who are working hard, who are trying to, you know, enjoy their lives and enjoy their communities and enjoy their parks and have their kids do the same. This all or none approach to homelessness and how we sort of put people into one of two camps, it has to stop if we're ever going to be able to address this issue in a meaningful way. Look, none of us want, you know, all of us, I think, have compassion for people who are in such a state of despair that they're living outside on the streets. I've talked publicly about how my dad died homeless, and he died homeless because he was an alcoholic for almost his entire adult life. He had substance abuse issues, and he had a severe mental health issue. And it was something that he just could not overcome in his life. So I have a profound sympathy for people who find themselves at that station in life. But it doesn't mean that we throw, you know, everything out the window and we don't attempt to, one, get them off the streets because it's not compassionate to leave them there. And two, understand that people deserve to enjoy their parks. People deserve to be proud of their city, to be able to go downtown. My mom was in town. I would have loved to take her to Pike Place Market. I used to love taking her there when I first came to the city and when she'd come out to visit. I would never take her down there now. And that's not me fear-mongering. That's the reality of the situation downtown. So it's a bummer that elected leaders can't have some common sense when it comes to this issue and put forth some reasonable standards for when a homeless camp needs to be cleared and when it shouldn't be cleared. All right, one more issue I want to get to. In the fastest 15, the city of Seattle settling with the family of Charlena Lyles for $3.5 million. So I'm sure you remember Charlena Lyles. She was the black mother of four, shot and killed by Seattle police in the summer of 2017. She had called police to her apartment, and she had had a number of run-ins with the police, had some clear mental health issues, you know, brandished a knife, ended up getting shot and killed. And the officers did not get in trouble for the shooting, although one of the officers was supposed to have a taser on him and did not. So he did get in trouble for not having his taser, which there was some disagreement about whether that would have helped in the situation. Charlena Lyles, they were in close quarters. She was wearing a really puffy jacket. There's some question about whether a taser would have even helped. But regardless, he should have had the taser on him. He was supposed to have the taser on him. But anyway, so the city of Seattle decides to, in this wrongful death suit brought about by the family of Charlena Lyles, to settle for $3.5 million. Rather than go to trial. And I know there's going to be some mixed reaction on this. Charlena Lyles' family and the son, you know, say they're not satisfied with this.
However, it still will not be my mother died, and I still want to see the cop that did this prosecuted.
So there's going to be an inquest into this. There's still a lot going on with the Charlena Lyles case, but the city of Seattle opting rather than to, and look, this could have been strategic to say, you know, you could have this long, lengthy, drawn out ordeal, or we can settle with this family up front. So I'm of two minds about this, but the city of Seattle opting just to settle in the case of Charlena Lyles. All right, coming up after the break, we've heard a lot about the city of Federal Way. Federal Way Mayor Jim Ferrell is trying to round up some South Sound mayors to really tackle the city's or the region's gun violence issue. Federal Way Mayor Jim Ferrell is going to join us live on the Dory Monson Show coming up. That is your Fastest 15. Welcome back to the Dory Monson Show. I'm Brandi Cruz filling in for Dory Monson. The violence is out of control in the South End, so much so that one South King County mayor has said it is the Wild West. and a new shooting just happening in Federal Way at an ARCO station that left two young men clinging to life at Seattle's Harborview Medical Center. A shooting happened late Tuesday night outside an ARCO gas station there in Federal Way. And it has prompted the mayor of Federal Way, Jim Ferrell, to say enough is enough. He is building a coalition of mayors across South King County to come together to speak up about what is happening and to urge all elected leaders to take action. Mayor Jim Ferrell joins us live on the Dori Monson Show. Mayor Ferrell, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brandy.
You called it the Wild West. How much worse have things gotten over there over the past year?
Well, it's gotten significantly worse, and I'm, you know, obviously it prompted action, but I want to let you know and let your listeners know that when I reached out to my fellow mayors, several of them had actually already thought about doing exactly what I, you know, what I was calling about, which was to gather the local mayors. It was mayors of Auburn and Kent had been talking over the weekend, and they were going to do the same. So I think it's an idea whose time has come, and we meet regularly about all kinds of issues. But I can tell you that it's something that, you know, the real tipping points have been the homicides along Pacific Highway, you know, the shootings that, you know, are many of them are drug related. I can tell you we're at an all-time high, where we're tying an all-time high of homicides in Federal Way at 10, and five of those are drug related. And that's just completely unacceptable, and we need to band together as cities. And I can only speak for Federal Way, but I'm looking forward to meeting with my fellow mayors and city administrators this Friday to talk about ways we can collaborate and also lobby the other elected leaders to help us out.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me to hear that the mayors of Auburn and Kent were all over this as well, because they're yeah. always front and center in these things. You know, Dana Ralph, she just seems like she's always on top of it, always out in front of things. So I'm glad you guys are coming together in a unified way. What role is the King County Executive, Dow Constantine, going to have, you think, in this new effort of yours?
Well, I also want to say that when I reached out to the mayors of Renton, Tukwila, and the city administrators of Des Moines and SeaTac, they were immediately supportive and absolutely had already thought that as well. So I think we've got unanimity with the South King County leadership at the municipal level. You know, my hope is, you know, Brandy, I don't know if you know, I spent 16 years as a King County prosecutor and 3 years as city prosecutor before that. So, I've known our county executive for a long time, and I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that, you know, if we all come together, especially all the cities that we've been discussing, we represent over 250,000 people. And my hope and my belief is that we'll get some responsiveness. My concern is on a couple of fronts. Number one, it was just announced earlier this week or late last week that they're closing down wings of the Regional Justice Center. And that goes in the wrong direction. Now when we need to book people, even during the week, we've got to go all the way down to Seattle. And that's the wrong direction. We need to make sure that we've got the capacity and the political will to hold people accountable. And that occurs at the King County Prosecutor's Office, too.
Yeah, the political will feels like it's hard to come by these days in some instances. Yep. And so let's just say, and I share your hope that Executive Constantine and that the King County Prosecutor's Office will hear your voices and understand that this united front is representative of a real problem that needs to be addressed. But if they don't, on an island, what can you and the other your fellow mayors in South King County do on your own if you don't get the buy-in?
Well, I don't know if you heard, but just about a month ago, I asked for and received the funding from the Federal Way City Council to add another 13 officers. We are already at an all-time high at 137, and that'll take us to 150. And that'll take us a while to get those numbers back in. I'm confident we'll do that. And we were able to move our finances around to be able to accommodate those new 13 new and additional officers. But we also do something called PROACT units. And those are deployments of officers in which we can go to high crime areas, either where motels or where robberies have occurred at certain retailers, and make sure that we're there before the action happens and that we can interdict when necessary. I've also authorized, and the council has approved, the additional patrols in downtown, overtime patrols. And we actually did earlier this year several $100,000 in extra overtime where we do a patrol on top of a patrol to where we can really increase our speed and response. And then the other thing that we're going to be doing is, in light of the kind of mob scene of retail, organized retail theft that was reported in San Francisco, mm-hmm. and to a lesser degree in the Puget Sound area, where people are coming in and taking things off shelves and stealing thousands of dollars in a very brief period of time, I'm putting together here in Federal Way a retail safety summit where we're gathering together retailers, large and small, local and regional and national, to talk about really a sea change in the way we approach retail theft and making sure that we have prosecutions and quick responses.
Yeah, especially right now with so many businesses struggling, it's been hard to see them.
Right.
I saw this, I think it was in California, this plywood over a storefront that said, "There is nothing left in here," to try to dissuade them from coming in. Just horrifying. You know, we talk about Seattle a lot. I know there's a lot of focus on the police staffing in Seattle, on the crime rate in Seattle. You know, but you and I both know that crime doesn't stop at a city limit. They don't get to, you know, the Renton and they're like, nope, can't go past here. So in your mind as a South King County mayor, when crime isn't addressed in Seattle, what impact does that have on the surrounding cities?
Well, you know, we frequently find that, you know, we had a case in point where we had a shooting here at an apartment complex last week where we got a license plate off of a car that we believed was involved in the shooting. And that same license plate was involved in a shooting at a Seattle police officer. So these things, you know, they're fluid. People move back and forth and they've got no respect for the jurisdiction. And really, we need to make sure that we're locking up arms. And then in addition to doing the lobbying, it's important that we share information with each other. Intelligence in regard to what's going on, who are the high impact offenders. And we've got a lot of experience in that in regard to like the car theft initiative or the repeat burglar initiative. Those were initiatives when I was at the King County Prosecutor's Office where they instituted what they called top 10 offenders. And they would really interdict and go out and locate those, what I refer to as high impact offenders. It's a very small number of people that are causing most of this mayhem.
You mentioned drugs earlier. You know, there is this constant conversation about the situation at our southern border, about narcotics, you know, making their way up to Washington State. We've talked about the deadly scourge of fentanyl and people dying from that.
Right.
Have you inquired, or to what extent have you been in touch with the DEA about where some of the drugs that are leading to the gang violence are coming from in your community?
You know, I have not had, it's a good suggestion, Brandy, I have not had a conversation with the DEA about, you know, the source of those narcotics. I can tell you, though, it's that street level, hand-to-hand, you know, drug rips that are occurring. And a drug rip is when, you know, somebody shows up to, or one or both of the parties show up to the drug deal and have no intention of going through with the deal, and their intention is to deprive the other of whatever half of the bargain they came with, and that's where the violence erupts, and that's where 5 of the 10 homicides in our city have occurred this year from, you know, at least half of the drug homicide or the homicides in the city of Federal Way are drug related. So I could tell you that that's fueling the violence, and it's the barriers that have been put in place with regard to what was passed at the legislative session in light of the Blake decision, where all it would have taken to fix the felony drug law in the state of Washington to add one word, the word knowingly, mm-hmm. and we would have been able to proceed and hold people accountable. But now they've got this paradigm in which you have to get 2 warnings and document those before you can even cite them on the 3rd occasion of being found with these drugs with a simple misdemeanor. And that has created such a high burden that we've got essentially what I refer to as de facto legalization of hard drugs. That's cocaine, heroin, methamphetamine, and fentanyl. And that's unacceptable.
Let's end with this, Mayor Farrell. We have Mayor Jim Farrell of Federal Way on the phone. You talked about political will and you know, maybe it being in short supply, and your hope that it isn't in this case. This shouldn't be a divisive issue for anyone wanting to make sure that, you know, young men are not dying on our streets and that innocent people aren't dying either. What can the public, you know, political will and public persuasion goes hand in hand often. What would your ask be of the public, Mayor Farrell, to try to maybe urge or usher in the political will necessary to tackle this issue?
Well, people who work in elective office work for the people they serve. I mean, and that's what's great about this country. We work for the people, and the people need to let their elected leaders know what they expect. And they also, you know, they also deserve safety. And I one of the things I say all the time, Brandy, is the number one priority of every government at every level is the safety of its citizens. And ultimately it goes even further, which is a social compact, whether that's homelessness or the enforcement of crime, is that we have agreed as a society we're not going to tolerate certain things. And we're not going to tolerate this here in Federal Way or in South King County.
Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell talking about the violence in South King County, how they're going to combat it. Mayor, thanks for joining us, and please do let us know what we can do to help, okay?
Will do. Thanks for having me, Brandy.
Absolutely. Coming up, you guys will probably recall that MSNBC stringer who was ticketed after following jurors from the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Well, police body camera footage of that encounter has now been released. That's next on the Dory Monson Show.
Friend, why are you so shy? Ain't like you to hold back or hide from the light.
Oh, don't. The queen.
Can we go to Vegas and see her? Did you
so
see
this
that
is,
that was just announced?
This is why I have this song. Nicole, why are you ruining my segment?
Sorry, I really
you
didn't
just usurped
know.
Me.
That was not the plan, so
man.
I just thought...
Well, this one's over. Ruin that. Okay. I'm just kidding. Adele. So I'm a huge Adele fan. Oh, my gosh. I love Adele.
Did you watch the special?
I watched the parts of it after the fact. So Adele announcing a 2022 Las Vegas residency at Caesars Palace. I've already registered to try to get tickets. I will sell anything. Kidney.
I'll go.
I'll sell anything for it.
I'll get registered.
And Dory
now.
Can come down there and gamble while we do it.
Yes.
That'll be great. Well, we go to the concert. I know I have a couple friends that are going to go. So, oh, I just love Adele. I'm so excited about this. I don't know if the audience cares, but I care, okay? I haven't been so excited for a concert since I watched NSYNC at the Fargo Dome. I did watch. All right, I've got hands down the best body camera footage I've ever seen in my career, ever. And I used to cover Law and Justice exclusively. I've seen a lot of body camera footage in my day. So you guys remember that there was the MSNBC stringer who got caught and ticketed following a bus full of jurors from the trial of Kyle Rittenhouse. Well, now we have the body camera footage of this officer stopping this NBC stringer.
What's the significance of you being here?
I work for NBC.
For NBC?
Yeah.
Okay, you're a reporter?
Producer.
Producer? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. So were you following a vehicle?
I was trying to see. I was being called by New York going, maybe we need to follow, but I don't know. I was trying to.
You trying to what?
Just do what they told me to do.
New York told you to follow a vehicle?
Yeah.
Your offices in New York or what?
That's right.
How did they know about this vehicle?
I mean, it was discreet. I wasn't like, talk to anybody. Just trying to find a location. That's all.
So this poor freelancer, he's like, I was told to do it. So he gets out his phone, dials up his producer in New York, and puts her on speaker with the police officer, and she is a disaster trying to explain to this officer what's going on.
Hi, officer. My name is Irene. I'm a booking producer with NBC News.
Uh-huh.
We were just trying to respectfully, just trying to see if it's possible to find any leads about the case, and so we were just keeping our distance, just to see like where people involved in the trial, are positioned. By no means were we trying to get in contact with any of the jury members or whoever's in the car. We just were trying to see like where key players in the trial may be at.
Nice try, Irene. from New York. We don't want to see, we don't want to talk to them. We just want to find out where they live. That officer was not having it. Best body camera footage. We'll be right back on the Dory Monson Show. We have a big retirement on the team. Someone who I admire quite a bit, Tom Tangney. His last day after 27 years, he's going to join us coming up on the Dory Monson Show.